Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight, not my normal thing, Mueller launches his Halloween witch hunt to drain the swamp. Normally, I would consider this proverbial gossip, but something very interesting is happening. If you look at the initial indictments that Special Prosecutor Mueller has issued. One is for Paul Manafort. Manafort is the proverbial swamp critter. I had one dealing with Roger Stone, who was then partner with Manafort and Black Manafort and Stone when I lived in Washington. And I would say it marked him as one of the sleaziest men I've ever come into contact with. I watched him and an equally sleazy New York Times Washington editor destroy the career of an excellent investigative reporter from the New York Times. Kemp's chief of staff had also started at Black Manafort and Stone, I was told, as a campaign driver. And I know what he reminded me of. So my personal experience, of course, Manafort's reputation was worse than Stone. So they were the ultimate in swamp critters. And so it's interesting that we should see Mueller finally draining the swamp. If you read the indictment, his charges against Manafort have nothing to do with the Trump campaign. Manafort has pled not guilty, although if you look at the specifics of the indictment, which I've read, I can't imagine how he's going to skate and prove innocence on the foreign accounts and money laundering. I don't see how he does that given what is in the indictment, but you never know until you hear the other side. It's hard to imagine that they won't get a conviction on at least one account. The question is Mueller squeezing him for something on Trump? The trouble is no one's going to believe Manafort. I mean, no matter what Manafort says, is particularly because he's being squeezed, but even before he was being squeezed, nobody believes him anyway. So it's quite remarkable, but you're looking at one very big, plump, fat swamp critter being squeezed, and it'll be interesting to see how many more get caught. There were two other people indicted, one Gates, who is one of Manafort's partners. Meantime, sex abuse accusations are flying back and forth. We've pulled in addition to Weinstein and George W.H. Bush, we pulled in Dustin Hoffman, we've pulled in Kevin Spacey. I think Netflix has announced it's going to cancel House of Cards after the last season, in part because of the accusations against Spacey. What's interesting is we really saw a swarm developing on George H.W. Bush, which got shut down. Wham! Andrea Mitchell came out and said, you know, there's nothing wrong with this. Of course, then another one came out and said he did it before he was in the wheelchair. And I, meantime, tweeted some rather nasty comments about Andrea Mitchell. She's Alan Greenspan's wife. In fact, she was a former colleague of mine. I arranged to have her put on the board at the University of Pennsylvania once upon a time. And, you know, but basically Greenspan engineered the housing bubble, and Andrea Mitchell didn't raise Bo Peep about that. And Lord knows all the other things going on in Washington. So it's really, you know, one swamp critter defending the next. The witch trials, nevertheless, are on, and the reason I bring this up is these kinds of processes are going to accelerate as the cashless cut from global 2.0 to 3.0. And unfortunately, this is how people in Washington fight with razor blades. So the likelihood of this building into something much bigger, whether through Mueller or just accusations flying back and forth, is very, very great. And of course, it's going to make it a very dangerous place to work and live and be. And interestingly enough, it couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. So it'll be interesting to see how it evolves. I'm going to be watching it simply because if you get enough critical mass, you can really see some major institutional shifts if enough people start getting taken out. Of course, that brings me back to my old expression, the mini-night thing, the mini-night kill each other. Money in markets, the U.S. dollar now up a tad. It's 94.59. I think part of that is hope for the tax package passing. It's now down 7.53% for the year. Fixed income, the long treasury, up 7.4%. the intermediate treasury ETF up 2.85%, the bond aggregate 3.32%, junk still holding in there at 6.39%. The S&P now up 16.99%, essentially 17% for the year. Home builders up 20.07%, the European ETF FTSE 25.33%, Germany up 28.97%, wow, go Germany. Developed markets up 23.07%, China up 34.42%, China small caps, that's large caps, China small caps up 35.4%, and emerging markets up 33.67%. Commodities are down 2.28%, so a little bit of a recovery there. Gold now up 10.56%, silver up 7.02%. Papers this week have been full of stories about, yes, gold's up, but all the business is going to Bitcoins. Dealers are having very bad years. It's not what I've heard from the dealers I've spoken to, but Franklin did say the last time he did a precious metals report that premiums have collapsed. And oil now down 8.37%, so a bit of a recovery there too as well. The Fed met and held steady, maybe rise in December is the indication. Clearly, the economy is bifurcated. If you look under the, you know, there's sort of parts of the economy that are doing well, parts not well. And part of this is the technological divergence. The problem is if you look under the carpet at the part that's doing well, it's way too dependent on government money and debt. Not to mention the $21 trillion missing money. God knows how much more is going missing 2016 and 2017. And, of course, getting that government money and debt is way too dependent on military and force. And there's falling productivity in too many parts of the economy. And interestingly enough, just announced last week, falling savings rate dropping from pretty significantly, almost in half. And all of this underscores the importance for the Republicans of getting tax reform. They were going to announce their bill yesterday, but negotiation kept it going until today, and it was announced today. Ryan is insisting he wants to pass by November 28th, so, you know, basically by the Thanksgiving period. That's an aggressive schedule. If you look at the Republicans' need for a victory and Trump needs to sort of deliver this for the economy, I think the Republicans are going to go all out. And so the question is, I want to see how this thing percolates around, but by next week I want to take a position on whether I think it's going to pass or not. It's clear that Republicans want to produce something that will help working families in the heartland. Trump's commitment to his voters, despite the need to swing corporate and foreign money back in the country, you know, appears to be better than I had expected. Let's just go through some of the details. 401k plans, despite weeks of arguing among lawmakers, they didn't change the 401k retirement plans. State and local deductions maintain a deduction of up to $10,000, but income and sales tax could be eliminated. Corporate taxes, the corporate rate would be lowered to 20% from 35%. It's unclear if this is immediate or gradual. I want a lot more information about what this will achieve on repatriation. A mortgage deduction is going to be moved from new homes from a cap of $1 million down to $500,000. Child tax credit is raised to $1,600 from $1,000. The $4,050 per child exemption is also eliminated. The legislation eliminates the alternative minimum tax, a supplemental tax meant to offset benefits a person with a high income which should receive. The bill also phases out the so-called estate tax. I believe in 6 years, the estate tax will go away. In the meantime, it will be the limit will be doubled, and then it will be phased out over a six-year period. My guess is, and this is a very hard one for the administration to deal with, because clearly what they're trying to do is attract in lots of money from overseas, I bet, including from Asia, but they can't do it without getting rid of that estate tax. So I think they're hoping that will do it. Tax filings, the goal is to aim to make tax filings much simpler. The filing system now, this is probably a Trumpism. would be able to be completed on a postcard with just 15 lines for most Americans. That is really good news. The plan also shrinks the number of tax brackets from 7 to either 3 or 4. It looks like the top rate won't be changed. Now, getting this by, if the Republicans say they're going to pass it by November 20th, then getting it passed by November 20th, 28th is going to be very important to the U.S. stock market. And one of the biggest things I'm thinking about these days is sitting around wondering if this is going to pass or not and what it means to equities. The U.S. equity market is up about 25% since the Trump win. If tax reform fails this year, you know, because we are way overdue for a 5% correction and years overdue for a 25% correction, you know, we could theoretically get a 5 to 25% correction. And I, you know, I think a lot of tax reform is baked into this market. So if it doesn't pass, expect a bumpy ride. If it does pass, what will be interesting is how much corporate and private wealth is going to shift into the United States. And the question is, what, as that capital moves back in, what's it going to do to dollar-denominated debts around the globe? Will it make it harder and more expensive to service them, and how far up could the dollar go? So it's not clear to me yet how big that shift is, but that's what I'm watching. And I think potentially it could have a very significant impact. If the Republicans go for broke and fail, you know, expect a correction. Jerome Powell picked for the Federal Reserve. Mnuchin won at Powell, and big questions. I've got a lot of questions this week. Why was he preferred over Yellen? He's New York, not California. If you look at the bunch dealing with the Fed chairman, it's basically Trump, Mnuchin, Gary Cohen, they're business guys. It's a lot easier for them to deal with a New York investment banker and money person than an academic, and he's going to be more sympathetic or on regulatory issues, having dealt with them personally within a variety of contexts. He worked at Dillon Reed when I was there, but I never worked with him, so I kind of know a little bit about him, but I can't really tell you I know him. He was basically sort of Brady's guy, went to Treasury with Nick Brady, had been the chairman of Dillon Reed, and then became the Secretary of Treasury. And I believe after he left Treasury, went to Bankers Trust for a while. And then he, in 1997, when the money started to go getting pulled out of HUD and DOD, he went over to Carlyle as a partner. I have a very strong belief that Carlyle was one of the major money launderers for that money coming out. And I think Brady and some of the others probably put Powell over there to make sure everything was going right. The, you know, the Carlyle group was a little bit more Zio-Con-y. And so I think the Pilgrims put in Powell to make sure everything went straight. So that's conjecture. I don't know that. I couldn't prove that. And but he's somebody they would trust to handle those kinds of operations. Anyway, given the speed of change, you want somebody with deep business experience. He's a New York guy, so Mnuchin's going to be more comfortable with him. I think he's a crossover candidate for both the Pilgrims and what Cynthia would call the Zio-Cons. You know, as a Brady guy, he comes from the Pilgrim side, but I think if you look at his work experience, he's basically viewed as conscientious and reliable. Mnuchin, my guess, is a pretty he's a pretty clever, slick character, and he wants a team player, not somebody quite as slick as him. Mnuchin is another sort of crossover between the Zio-Con and the Pilgrim groups. His father, Bob Mnuchin, was really one of the key people building equity sales at Goldman Sachs with Gus Levy, the very famous leader of that firm for many years. Right after the election, I did a special on with Joseph Farrell on sort of the team lineup for the Trump team and went over Mnuchin's background in detail. He went to Yale and was Skull of Bones. So, that kind of puts him as a crossover between the Pilgrims and the Zio-Cons. My guess is Powell's the sort of Yale and Harvard endowment pick. And Powell's not going to balk at some issues where Yellen might balk, and Yellen would have the Fed bureaucracy behind her. So the other thing is she's California, and I just don't think that the you got a very New York team in the White House, and they're going to feel much more comfortable with a New Yorker. I almost want to ask how many people on her personal and professional Rolodex got burned out of their homes in Santa Rosa. So, given what's going on, they may not want a woman in there. Hero this week, my Uncle Robin. I went to a memorial service on Saturday at the Dover Quaker Meeting House in Dover, New Hampshire, for my Uncle Robin, 94 years old, the real cornerstone and patriarch of the Quaker side of my family. He was an absolutely remarkable human being, and really, in his own quiet, humble way, a great leader. And someone who taught me an immense amount. I keep coming back to the expression cornerstone because he was the real cornerstone, not only of our family, but a huge network. And it was interesting. You saw people streaming into the beautiful Quaker Meeting House because the autumn, it was autumn leaves time in New England. And it went to over a century of connections and relationships. Anyway, it was wonderful to renew and refresh the connection with friends, families, and culture. And if you're interested in that, you can take a look at the it's up on the commentary. It's run off the homepage, but if you just click back, you can find it. It's called Robin Launches a New Era. Robin was always in forward gear, and it's amazing too, if you look at how he kind of managed his death, it was, as the gladiator would say, it was a good death, a clean death. And you got the feeling from it that he was on to his next big thing, as John Rappaport would say. And the whole feeling of the meeting house was of a great new era. It was very exciting. Anyway, a great memorial service or any kind of family occasion is really a chance to renew and refresh our connection with our family, friends, and culture. And that's a well that is wonderful to drink from when it works. Anyway, let's go to the movies. Our topic is Control 101, and I wanted to talk about things that help us maintain a higher mind in the face of control systems. And one of my favorite movies about that is As It Is in Heaven, which includes one of the funniest scenes. I mean, if you want to give a hard time to organized religion, this movie does a great job. It's pretty funny. And music is on my mind because last week in New York, I had a wonderful time. I went to Helen Chapman with to the Metropolitan Opera on Tuesday for Tales of Hoffman, and then with some wonderful subscribers and business associates back to the Met for La Boheme on Friday. And between Tuesday and Friday, both productions were absolutely magnificent, just magnificent. And no matter how much covering the news can drag my mind into the sewer, great music can always bring it back. Anyway, if you haven't seen As It Is in Heaven, it's one of my favorite movies. But get out the Kleenex box, you're going to cry. Our interview today is not an interview, it's a discussion with Catherine about Control 101. I've never spent more time, I think, on a wrap up than this one. Only because I had to drill through so much thinking and information. I wanted to give you a very high-level overview that got you to really focus on the most important points. Because what I'm seeing as I travel and talk with people is that the most intelligent people do not have a clear, simple overview of how the control system works. There are many different aspects to it. You could write a Britannica, an Encyclopedia Britannica on, you could write a whole Wikipedia just on control, because essentially control ends up being involved in every system that we as a civilization have. Anyway, I really wanted to focus you on the critical and important issues about control, because this is where I always get bollocksed up. I said in the commentary to announce this Soleri report that for many years I've been a lone voice in the independent media. Everyone said it was going to, the economy was going to implode. And I said, no, it's not. The dollar was going to, implode. And I said, no, it wasn't. It's going to slow burn. Now, you know, things have changed and are a lot more fluid than they have been for the last 10 years. But the difference between me and most financial commentators had nothing to do with economics. It had nothing to do with markets. It had to do with my understanding of the control system. And every time I tried to explain that to another member of the independent media, they refused to go there. They said, I don't want to talk about control files. I don't want to talk about covert operations. I don't want to talk about pedophilia. That's just too depressing. I don't want to talk about it. Now, my attitude is if you're going to talk to people about their money, you can't suppress reality. That's a material omission under securities law. Material omissions can be felonies. You know, you just don't do that. So my attitude is if I'm going to talk about your money, I got to deal with reality. It's one of my old partners used to say, it is what it is. It is what it is. So, but it's been, that's been the big difference between the it's going to implode crowd and Catherine saying it's going to slow burn. The difference was the ability to deliver control one by one on a highly economic basis through many different overlapping technologies. It's not simple. There are many different systems involved. Anyway, when I get into the trenches with somebody and I say, okay, let's talk about real solutions. How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? How are we going to rebuild our local power? How are we going to enforce the Constitution? I get in a immediate series of hiccups because they can't fathom that the control system is the way it is. And I can't afford to work with someone who doesn't understand that because ultimately there and my time is going to be completely wasted. And so this is something that's been frustrating me over many, many years. It's been a very frustrating experience. And finally, I decided, okay, you know, I have to get over this and I have to deal with this and I have to write up control and hit this head on and say, everybody, okay, we need a clear, coherent picture of how the control systems work before we're going to get anything done. Now, I wanted, again, you could write in Encyclopedia Britannica. I wanted to cover the really important points. And one of the most important points is we do not know how our governance system really works. It's invisible to us. It's a mystery. But one of the things we know, the bedrock of its control is force, physical force. The governance structure has the ability to kill with impunity, without accountability, without being held accountable under the law. That's reality. And if we're going to change things, we have to come up with a way of dealing with that. So part of what inspired me to do this was going to a series of different events, including the Nexus Conference, and listening to people talk, proposing radical change without understanding the extent to which they were presenting their jugular to the very top of the governance system and basically saying, yes, annihilate us, you know, tear up the Constitution. We don't need it. It's old, if you can imagine that. Or simply thinking that we can affect change with financial products. The reality is it's the people who physically control the cables, the satellites, the sea lanes, all the things that the various trade flows, whether digital or physical, go through, the people who have physical control of the hardware and the turf control. And if you threaten their control, they are free to kill you outside the law, not to mention, you know, commanding $1 trillion a year of military expenditures. So there seems to be, you know, in the G7, we have lived inside prosperity and relative peace, and we have been protected from a great deal of the force that is used, around the world or has been used throughout history. And we need for those veils to come off if we're going to navigate the road ahead. And if we're going to affect real change, we have to understand the game we're playing in, and we have to be good at control. The reality is the hard thing for me to process about control has always been the thing that's always been the source of the most personal emotional pain is not, not that the leadership implements control and does very violent, cruel things to get that. I understand their position. It's politics. What has always amazed me is the extent to which the general population will sell each other out, and not just sell each other out, but for really, really cheap. You know, they will give away their equity, their family's equity, you know, their community's equity for pennies on the dollar. It's really, really scary. And at some point I built a capacity to not be disappointed by the betrayal of people around me. And, and each time it happens, I learn a lot about the double binds we're put in, the multiple personality disorder that occurs in this kind of economy and control system, and the nature of how centralized control really works, and really works to divide us from each other. It's quite extraordinary. Anyway, so I spent an awful lot of time thinking and outlining and writing and researching about this. But ultimately, what I decided to do was to do a high level overview, because what is really is important that you understand the basic model, and the basic model depends on force. Anyway, so take a look, Control 101. It's up on the web presentation, and I did an audio discussion with you about it, and. I don't know. I hope it's half as productive as you, as this process has been for me. And I also have to compliment the Soleri team, who did an incredible job helping me with this one, and not to mention Dr. Farrell's conversation on news trends and stories. If you haven't listened to them, they're both up, and the transcripts are both up. They were, I drove over to see him, and it was just a wonderful conversation, and it dovetails very nicely with the Control 101 issues, because I'll tell you something, Joseph really understands. He's amazing. Very, very powerful insight and a great conversation. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, thanks again for all you do. I'm wondering about the oath that Congress members take to the Constitution when they come out after any gun violence and speak passionately against the Second Amendment. Wouldn't that be a violation of their oath in that they're not being loyal to our Constitution, but rather inciting the people to take action against it? I haven't gone back and looked at their oath, but to me, yes, certainly in spirit, that is a violation and disrespectful. Now, I think that certainly anyone in Congress should be free to express a criticism of the Constitution or their feelings about it, but I think it is extremely important as the federal legislators, that they treat the Constitution with great respect. Speaking of anything with denigration, debatement can lead to harm. And I think if we're gonna believe in the rule of law, then we need to be careful not to denigrate and debase the most important law in the land. And so I believe it's very important that when they discuss any issues they want to discuss, that they do it in a manner that shows respect for the Constitution. Hi, Catherine. Looks like a couple of reports have recently come out that you would be interested in if you haven't seen already. And the subscriber sends me a link to one of the latest proposals or studies on sort of where the space industry is going. And it says that Space Age 2.0 will be worth almost $3 trillion in 30 years. I think it's going to be bigger, but let's see. I think the space race is going to be very big. So either way, significant growth, yes. California wildfires, a wonderful subscriber sent me a link to another piece on the California wildfires and asked me if it looked legitimate. I don't think it does look legitimate, not to say that there aren't nuggets in it, but it's sort of not well organized, and my guess is there's some disinformation in there, so I'd be careful. We have been getting regular reports, videos, and information on what happened in California, as well as fires, other fires around the country. I do think it looks like a good chance that it was directed energy attack or some kind of military or intelligence selected firebombing of the area. And I don't say that lightly, because I did not expect that kind of acceleration to happen this year. If this is the case, if it was a directed energy attack, if it was arson, particularly of the kind that would require operation in military airspace, or, you know, airspace essentially under control of the military, it has profound implications for all of us. Meanwhile, the president's screaming about North Korea, we're firebombing Northern California. How does that look? There are many reasons if this is the case. A lot of the recent videos coming out of California claim this is Agenda 21. My guess is Agenda 21 is only one of many possible reasons. So if this is done by U.S. military and intelligence infrastructure, basically the national security state, let's take a look. And remember, when something like this happens, many functions get stacked together. One is the need for large tracts of land to expand tech firms. If you're going to take Silicon Valley up to the north, they're really bursting out of the seams down in the south. So if you're going to move, create a Silicon Valley in the north, you need lots of big swatches of land. This would do it, particularly for military applications, including on space. You need large tracts of lands for foreign and domestic investors. If you're going to repatriate all this money, then you definitely need money going into real estate. I hate to mention it, but if you need to get large amounts of money in real estate, the question is, what do you think is going to happen to the dollar? Not good. You also have Mendocino and Sonoma having come out with laws against GMO. You may want to reverse that. And while you're at it, accumulate some of the smaller marijuana farms who are likely to go under as a result of this. You may have, and this is important, California is critical to the military-industrial complex. They have major operations both above ground, underground, on the ocean there. And they may be looking for a way to shut down a Catalonia kind of situation years before it really happens. If you look at what's percolating in California on secession or some of these other issues, their analysis may be, let's shut it off early before it looks like that's what we're shutting off. But it would be a twofer. You basically shut down the opposition in a way that clears land and opportunities for the companies and allies who will support you. So I do think there's a need to reverse pockets of activist support for secession or other public policies that are not in the interest of the military-industrial complex, including vaccines, including smart meters. There's a lot of healthy and intelligent resistance out in that area. Santa Rosa apparently had the largest homeless population in that area. So part of this could be a desire to kind of reduce the local homeless population. Then there's the need to signal to county and municipal leaders in California that if they don't play ball, look what could happen to them. So you're going to use this as a stalking horse around California to sort of command obedience. There may also be a need, you're talking about areas which are part of a very earthquake-prone area. So there may be a need to manage areas in danger of earthquakes, as well as protect underground bases and their access to natural resources, such as water. The list goes on. If we watch land use and investment patterns over the next couple of years, a lot more intelligence may emerge and we may be able to solve the mystery. But the important thing to remember is California is critical to military-industrial complex operations, and there's no way they're going to be allowed to go to first base on anything having to do with secession, etc. Well, that's it on that cheery note. That's closing. We have a great Solaria report for next week. We've just finished the third quarter wrap-up. We'll have it all together and published in PDF form in November. So I'm looking forward to getting it to you now that it's done. But next week, we have The War for Your Mind with Melissa and Aaron Dykes, two young independent reporters and researchers from Texas who have done an absolutely superb job on unpacking mind control. I've been so impressed with their work, and I was delighted they're making a great new documentary. I can't wait for it to come out. And they took time out of making the documentary to join me on the Solaria Report, and I think you'll really be impressed. I'm going to put up several of their videos, links to more that can really help you take a deep dive on mind control, which is hard to do, and they make it fun and light. Their videos are very charming, and they stay in a state of amusement, which I appreciate. Then November 16th, the part two for our deep state and budget politics with Richard Dolan. Now that tax reform is teed up and we've been through a year of sort of struggling, or almost a year of struggling with the budget, now's the time to come back and talk about the deep state and the relationship between the issues that Richard is dealing with, whether UFOs or false flags and the budget politics, because the budget is where this rubber really, 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 really meets the road. One of the things I want to talk to Richard about is we have what I call Corey Good 2.0, another huge UFO disinformation effort. And the basic speech is, oh, the DOD has been protecting us against aliens. That's where the $21 trillion went. Protecting us from aliens. You can trust them. They've done a great job. Just be grateful. You can't believe it. It's a version of what I used to tease George Norrie with on Coast to Coast. Mommy, mommy, the aliens made me do it. Anyway, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.